No democracy compares with a dictatorship when it comes to thrilling its citizens with the permission to travel abroad, even if it is just for a short private trip. In May 1980, when I was issued an approval for a 60-day stay in the West by the authorities in my home country, I had the idea to not cross the border by train at Hegyshalom, but to take a boat on the Danube. Besides the clear advantage of having the unpleasant formalities of passport and customs controls behind me right upon boarding, I imagined traveling by water would be soothingly nostalgic. It was exhilarating to push upriver on the Danube and, after the quick glance at the Bratislava castle, reach Austrian territory without a hint of border fortifications and watchtowers. Just like how it used to be back in the days of the dual monarchy. It was the year when Austria was celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Independence Treaty, or in other words, its internationally recognized neutrality. Strolling through Vienna's inner city, I noticed a peculiar artwork in one of the windows of Café Deme. It depicted the state secretaries of the four former occupation forces, together with the representatives of the Austrian government of 1955 on the balcony of Belvedere Palace. In front of them were four trucks packed full of soldiers, ready to leave the territory of the new neutral state in the directions of the wind. Befitting the establishment, the scene was modeled in marzipan. This providential turn in Austrian history, as it were, had been honored with a pastry monument. I stood in front of the shop window for quite some time with a watering mouth. I would have loved to taste a bit of this confectionery-crafted neutrality and not even shied away from biting off a piece of Bruno Kreisky's head. The scene at the Belvedere, which I had seen as a pupil in the weekly cinema newsreel, incited enormous envy for the neighbor country among my compatriots, as if it had won the jackpot in the history class lottery. 1.5 years later, the Fata Morgana of Vienna tempted poor Imre Neutsch to declare his country withdrawal from the Warsaw Pact and Hungary's neutrality. A lunatic idea that would cost him his life in the end. Not even the Russian tanks could succeed immediately in shattering this quixotic utopia, as many Hungarians at the end of December 1956 still awaited the arrival of UN troops to make the dream of neutrality come true. Those less patient crossed the green border to reconnoiter the next station in their lives at the Traiskirchen refugee camp. Around 40,000 stuck around in the imperial city, set up shop in the Burg Quarter, in the Maria Hilf or Josefstadt districts, perhaps betting on the proximity of their lost home country. Indeed, it was just a stone's throw away, if it wasn't for the watchtowers in the middle of Lake Neusiedl and the curtain running from Sombathay to St. Gotthard. Somewhere in the grey 70s, I sat with a friend in a Budapest cafe. We played chess and chatted, as was common among intellectuals back then, about the state of affairs. Problems with publishing, travel restrictions, illegal literature, the USSR, Helsinki, and so forth. At some point, we were both gripped with a strange fatigue, as if the epoch had suddenly exhausted us. We found it and our place therein dreadfully boring. My friend put the depressive mood in a nutshell. "You know," he said, "the only reason why we talk about these dull things is because we were born and live here." Indeed, as we unfolded the plot further, had we seen the light of day just 250 kilometers to the west of this shabby cafe, everything would have turned out different, very different. As free people, we wouldn't give a damn about politics. We'd pursue an ordinary profession and live life with lots of music, nature, love, and sports. Strange, I pondered today, almost 50 years later, Aren't we, despite all freedoms, also prisoners of an era which we never chose? Who grants you a valid passport for better worlds nowadays? A boat trip is better than traveling by train, wrote my grandfather on August 28, 1914, to my grandmother. Enlisted as a reservist in the garrison of the 71st Honved Infantry Regiment in Trenčín, he now waited in a Vienna barrack to be sent to the Galician front. As can be read in their daily postcards and cables, which I keep in my archive, he desperately tried to convince my grandmother to take her little daughter, my mother, and board a boat to Vienna so he could arrange a happy family get-together in the city. With each passing day, he expressed this wish more emphatically, as if he already anticipated that the meeting would mean a goodbye. Grandmother's hesitation made him downright hysterical. He concocted a concrete plan. The rendezvous would take place in the home of his aunt Bertha at her address on Dampfschiffstrasse 17 in Vienna. Upon her arrival, he would ask for a few hours of absence from his regiment and pick her up at the pier. Aunt Bertha has a wonderful apartment, two same-sized rooms facing the street, a splendid bathroom with two windows and a big kitchen. I stress that this is the only opportunity to see each other again. Is the visit to Vienna ever going to happen? Then the last cable. Come immediately, otherwise it's too late. Nothing became of this dream, this teary-eyed, blissful gathering. My grandfather's journey to the West was followed by an equally involuntary journey in the opposite direction. On September 11, 1914, he was captured by the Russian army, and his next postcard, filled out in German and printed by the International Red Cross, only arrived in November. The sender's address read, Prisoner of War Camp Krasnoyarsk, Siberia. Some years later, he went missing in the turmoil of the Russian Civil War. Now, in May 1980, I stood in front of the house Dampfschiffstrasse 17 nearby the Danube Canal. Driven by an irrational curiosity, I studied the board listing the names of the inhabitants. Neither Berlina nor Bertha were among them. The building had nothing special about it, perhaps looked just the same in 1914. A Central European tenement, three stories, with an in-house supervisor, no elevator, it could stand in Budapest in the 6th or 7th district. Nevertheless, the house portal already kindled the vague impression that I had been here before in bygone times, as if I could pick up a thread of my own history, reinstate a broken continuity. This small world, a microscopic part of the former dual monarchy, is still stuck in the memories of later generations, at least in the ahistorical enigma, what if? In reality, I saw life as a fateful passage of people, countries, and continents, as a long path of wars, dictatorships, watchtowers, and iron curtains, in which the Demel confectionery, with its marzipan scene of the Belvedere, was the last remaining symbol of freedom.